everyone, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Radio Radar. We're going to be talking about the 10 best games we saw at PAX 2013. I'm Hollander Cooper, and here with me is...
Ryan Telgenick.
Greg Henniger.
And we just got back from PAX a day and a half-ish ago, or like at like midnight, so I guess technically a day ago.
Yeah.
And 4 day long this year. 4 day long. PAX was extra long.
It was my first PAX, too.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and say straight off, I definitely enjoyed myself. It had a very different vibe than most of the other conferences I've been to. But goddamn that layout. The multiple floors.
It's
and
weird,
like,
isn't it?
It was very confusing.
There's a mysterious fifth floor that you can only access at like certain points.
Mm-hmm. They need to get into a different convention center. I know they booked that convention center for like the next 90 years or some shit.
Their
but
escalators are like that Escher painting, like that goes up and down.
That
and
building is like Hogwarts in a number of ways, not the least of which is the fact that it feels like the layout
nerds.
Is always changing. And it's filled with nerds.
And half the time I tried to use those escalators, they were broken, and I had to walk up them like a real person walks upstairs,
you know
which
what?
Was frustrating.
You know what's the frightening thing? One time I was walking up an escalator that was not moving, and then it started moving, and everyone almost fell.
No, so I did the same thing, but it was at Universal Studios in Hollywood.
So it was just a ride.
Well, the escalator is like maybe like seven escalator, like normal escalators lengths long. So it just goes down the side of this really long hill, and everyone's going up the escalator, and you don't realize that you have momentum while you're doing
right.
That. Like the stairs are carrying you forward at a certain speed. So then all of a sudden the escalator like lurches forward and then stops. And there's like 100 people on this escalator.
God.
So everyone falls forward and then starts falling backwards. And it's like incredibly steep. So it was just like this mass of people like falling on top of each other.
Oh, my God.
And I was like a 10-year-old kid when this happened. So like my dad just like crushed me down on the escalator. He's like, people were screaming.
No one survived.
Escalator stories.
You are the boy who lived.
Yeah. I was under a pile of 40 other people.
Yeah, but I think the most shocking thing about PAX this year, and none of us were into PAX the last few years. I went like 5 years ago or 4 years ago, but was that the indie scene was so much more shockingly remarkable than any of us expected.
Oh, yeah. It was not only was it packed full of amazing stuff, but I would say the indie scene almost took up more floor space than anything else did, really.
Any one other thing.
Yeah.
But that's the problem. The indie, like, there was the indie mega booth where they shoved 40 or 50 indie
games
into a kitchen.
Yeah, it was pretty packed.
I feel like next year they have to either give the sixth floor, just
perfect.
Give it to indies.
That would have been perfect.
If you are an indie, you can have this floor at an indie discount or some shit because nobody even knows that floor is there. But yeah,
all the PC stuff was.
Oh yeah, ton of indie games, and number 10 on our list of the best games we saw at PAX 2013 is Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time.
Oh, yes. I got to play this game with a random stranger who disappointingly was very, very bad at it. And so our
Did
journey
you end
was
up being
short-lived.
Lovers?
No, but I played the wife of the husband. It was glorious. But the way this game kind of works is the two of you are in this giant sphere of a spaceship that has many different stations inside of it. You can kind of imagine it's almost like a co-op FTL. So the way it works is there are...
My jaw just dropped, by the way.
There are many stations in your ship. There are multiple turrets. There's a rotating plasma cannon. There's a shield generator that you can move around the sphere of the ship to block projectiles. And then, of course, there's the actual steering of the thrusters. And there's two of you in the ship, and you can each only man one station at a time. So it's a lot of... shuffling around and taking up whatever it is that you need that will best help you in that in whatever situation. So it's kind of like the whole goal of the game is you're flying a ship around and trying to liberate these planets from alien occupants. And so you'll fly to a planet, and all along the way you'll encounter tons of enemy ships that are trying to kill you, and you'll just work together to destroy them all and then kill the aliens that are on the planet. And if you liberate a planet, you get some health back. So it's kind of just trying to stay alive as long
nice.
As you can.
So you're
kind of
just like switching positions in the
yes.
ship nonstop, trying to coordinate with the other person.
Mm-hmm.
What were you playing it on?
It's only going to be available on PC and Mac, at least for right now.
How was the co-op working? Controllers still?
Yeah, it seems like it'd be much easier to play with a gamepad because, I don't know, it just seems like it'd be tough to get two people on a keyboard. But... It worked really well.
Usually
it was very, very fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like, I guess, again, the best way to describe it is kind of like a two-player FTL. But there's not a, you're not like going around buying upgrades or anything like that. Mm. Like, what you have is what you have, and your ship doesn't change. It's just
what's the art style like?
Kind of cartoonish looking, and
is it like
pixelated,
top down, like
almost
FTL?
Like Mutant Blobs Attack.
Yeah, that's what I would say is a pretty good representation. But yeah, it was super fun and really really tough. So you'll definitely have to coordinate. But yeah, that game was awesome.
Nice.
Have they given a release date?
Nope, not yet.
Oh, well, it's an indie game, so it'll either be out tomorrow or it will
or never.
2017.
Mm-hmm.
The next game is actually an Xbox One launch title.
Ba-ba-da-ba.
Peggle 2.
Peggle 2, yeah, it was...
So excited for this.
Yeah, it's if you love Peggle, you're definitely going to love Peggle 2. It's more of the same, which is not a bad thing.
Oh, thank God it's
Peggle,
more of the
yeah, because Peggle's incredibly awesome. But they added a couple of new features. Like with each stage, there are additional. There's like three bonus objectives that you can compete or complete, and some of them are kind of like zany and funny. They're not all like, you know, get a maximum score on this level and you'll complete this bonus objective. Some of them are like, try and only hit 7 tiles the entire round.
Goddamn, that sounds complicated.
Yeah.
Or not complicated, just difficult.
Yeah, I mean, and they're completely optional. You know, you're trying, like, your main goal is to, like, get all the orange pegs,
yeah, orange
I believe.
Pegs.
Yeah, before you run out of balls and stuff, so. But also...
Did anyone else hear when he said run out of balls?
Yeah, I did. That's why I giggled.
It was
again, I haven't actually ever played Peggle.
Oh, my God.
And what's stopping you?
I don't know.
It's on almost every like platform available.
If you can touch a computer, if you can touch a digital thing from where you're sitting, 75% chance you could be playing Peggle right now.
My Blu-ray player plays Peggle.
Wow.
But,
TI-83 plays it flawlessly.
So there are like what they call masters that you choose one of them and then you can play that segment. And then each master has a different superpower that you can use when you hit the pink pegs.
Yes.
Turns the ball into like a fireball that like does that explodes more pegs and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like it's just a bigger area of effect.
Yeah, they all have varying degrees of effect.
I like there was one I don't know if it's still in this one, but like so essentially anything the ball hits is hit and at the end of the round it will disappear and you'll get points for it. And in Peggle 1 there was one that literally just put a hat on top of the ball so that if it like the hat would kind of like bounce around as the ball moved, so the hat also counted as hitting stuff for the sake of that. It's the stupidest upgrade.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
But then they would usually just be like in the corner, just like a little logo, an icon of the person that would move a little bit and say like little catchphrases.
I think they just sat in like the top middle from where the ball came out.
Yeah.
Of.
One was a Jimmy Lightning. He's a skateboarding golfer. And he would say like, oh, radical and dutical and stuff.
The game's tone. It's funny because the game is so obviously, it has the tone of a game you would have gotten from like the Scholastic.
Right.
Like, because it's so like, it's like there's a unicorn and there's like the radical gopher. But meanwhile, the same day the game came out originally, they came out with a a Valve branded version that like the unicorn has a head crab stabbed through his horn, like super bloody. Like,
yeah,
so it's obvious it's not actually an edutainment game,
yeah,
even though it's jokingly looks like one.
But now those they like fully fleshed out those masters and will put them on the side of the screen, like in their own little area, and they're just hanging out. They're like they're all fully animated and do all these different things now, and they'll congratulate you on your good shots or give you tips, or if you're doing terribly, they'll just laugh at you and mock you. And one of the new masters that we saw, her name was Luna, and she's like this little skeleton girl in a graveyard, and her ball power is she can turn all of the blue tiles into ghosts, so you can shoot right through them.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so you can like hit those pesky orange pegs that are like way the hell in a weird direction.
That sounds OP as hell.
Yeah, and when you go through them, they reappear for the next time you use they reappear for the next time you use the ghost power. I think you can use it 2 or 3 times. And then once the ghost power is run off, then all the ones that you hit vanish from the main screen.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, it seems like a really good power. But I'm super excited, and I cannot wait to put hundreds of hours
into it. 2.5 months or so, 3 months, I guess, with the Xbox One release date just announced.
November 22nd.
Woo! All right, number 8. I'm going to butcher how to say this, but Luftrausers?
That's close. I think that's vaguely how I remember them pronouncing it when I was at the booth.
It's made by Vlambeer, right?
Yes.
They made Ridiculous Fishing.
Yep.
And what else? They made something else.
Well, yeah, I don't know. They're also working on they insisted that it was a roguelike.
Oh, good.
But they're the other new game that they're working on right now. I forget. Its name escapes my feeble brain at this exact moment in time. But Luftrausers?
There's no S in the beginning.
Did I spell it wrong?
Luftrausers.
The Luftwaffe was the German Air Force.
I think it's Luftrausers.
Yeah, so
I bet Rouser is some kind of like airplane. Getting a rouse. Etymology of words.
There
you
go. But the whole goal of this game is to become the best fighter pilot in the world. And it's what? Just kind of like a shmup. Sort of.
Yeah, it's a shmup, except you have full control of where you're going. It's not like you're on a...
You're constantly moving.
You're not on
one
a treadmill
direction.
Going forward.
No. You launch out of an aircraft carrier, mm-hmm. and you can go in, and you can just go straight up. You could go either direction. It's almost more like an arena shooter, technically, except it's 2D, and you're just kind of going around. Like, if you just flew in one direction shooting at stuff, it would look like a
shmup,
but you could also shoot up or down, or you could go, like... And then if you... You can shoot nonstop,
mm-hmm.
and if you take damage, but if you stop shooting,
you regenerate health.
But it's funny because you can if you like hit the water and like you can go underwater for a second, and come back up,
really?
Like being damaged a little.
Well, one of the
physics.
Can you catch fish while you're down?
No,
there?
I wish.
No.
But like the physics are remarkably good considering how simple that.
Yeah,
game
yeah. The momentum of it is just so fun to play with because it's kind of like. It almost reminded me the way you'd move at least a little of Asteroids, where you're pushing up on the D-pad and it's making you're getting thrust in that direction. But as soon as you let off, you immediately start lurching right back toward the ground because the gravity plays a big role in the game. But while you're falling toward the sea, you can spin in circles and just hammer down on your guns and it'll spin like. You'll spin shots and just destroy everything around
you. Yeah, there'd be times where I'd be flying away from an end. Like three planes would be following me and shooting me, and I'd be flying away. And then I would just let go of the throttle, spin around backwards, shoot them as gravity and momentum is pulling me in the direction and I start falling, and then spin back around and continue going.
That's pretty awesome.
And it's like you know how to do that. Within seconds of starting the game.
Yeah, it's very difficult to describe even. It's like until you actually get your hands on it and you see how it plays, it's super cool. And you can build your ship from a ton of different parts. You can change out the guns. You can change out the middle body and the tail.
Oh, really?
And it's like there's tons of really cool guns. There's basic machine gun. There's a spread gun from Contra. There's a solid laser beam that shoots out, and it's a huge cannon.
Are these things that you pick up while you're flying around? Or
I'm not really sure if they're things you have to gradually unlock. I mean, when we were playing the demo, they were just readily available for us to choose.
Right.
And then some of the benefits of changing out other parts of your plane are things like you can go in the water and take no damage, or you can ram straight into enemy aircrafts and they will explode and you will also take no damage. So it's just like stuff like that. They each have a passive effect.
Yeah. Cool. And I can't oversell how fun this game was. I don't think there's any other... I can't think of another game from PAX that... some of the other games were super, they were thought-provoking,
mm-hmm.
but a game that I had so much fun playing, a game that I really regretted I couldn't just on the flight home be playing.
I know.
And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Ridiculous Fishing, just in terms of the, Ridiculous Fishing, a single game, quote-unquote, only lasts, 40 seconds, 30 seconds? And it's the same kind of
Depends
thing where it's just a score grind.
Though.
Well, I mean, even if you're really good, you hit the bottom of the ocean eventually.
At about a minute, probably.
Yeah, so, the matches in this, I mean, I'm sure if you're great at the game, you can keep going. But there's no, you're not fighting through levels as far as
right.
I can tell.
Right, yeah, it gets progressively tougher as more and more enemies swarm the screen. And as soon as they told me that it is going to be on PlayStation Vita, I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Oh,
I will play it for hours.
Because
it's not on iOS, right?
PC, no. Mac, PS3, Vita, aka
Vita.
Yep. I mean, I'm sure playing this on the PC on a flight also would be great.
Right.
God, it was so fun. Yeah. The art style is great too. All of the the background is just yellow with clouds and some nice, really minimalist. And the ships are just brown.
Are yeah,
like boats, planes, airships, everything is just like a muddy looking brown.
It's really cool. And the music is also phenomenal. So
yeah, and also there's a super difficult mode that I turned on by mistake over and over again. Because so the way you shoot in the game is X, and you'd think X would be like start
on a keyboard.
Yeah. But X is turn on super difficult mode. And the PR, one of the developers was like, "Stop doing that." And I'm like, "I keep hitting the wrong button."
I know.
Because instead of launching and seeing three planes, you launch and there are 50 planes on you immediately.
Yeah, super awesome game. Cannot wait for that one to come out.
Yeah. Number 7, a game that Ryan has not shut up about. Tiny Brains.
Oh, yeah. This game was so good. So
Lucas loves this game also.
Yeah, it's a four-player co-op game where you play as one of four lab animals that has been experimented on by an evil scientist. And through his experiments, each of these lab animals has gained a unique power. So one of them can summon a block of ice. One can push objects. One can pull objects, like, with their minds. And then the one that I played as can swap places, like teleport, swap places with either objects or enemies. And so really you have to use the powers of each of them to get it's a puzzle game, so you have to solve puzzles, physics-based puzzles, using their abilities. But it's super, super, very, very cute game, super fun. And it was one of the few games at PAX, this and Towerfall, I would say, were some of the indie games that had the biggest people just standing around watching and cheering people.
Right? I'd also throw in a game that's not on this list, but Crypt of the NecroDancer.
Oh, yes. That also had a huge...
Which, real quick, it's essentially a dungeon crawler where you play with a DDR pad.
Yeah, which looked awesome, and I regret not
The only reason we couldn't play it is because the crowd was too... Like, you couldn't get close enough.
Yeah. So those three games, I would say, had huge, huge crowd of people, like, cheering people on and getting really into it. And
right.
It was... The cool thing about Tiny Brains was, so we played through a puzzle demo, which was a couple levels, and that was really, really fun. But then they put us in this secondary challenge mode, where the four of us, we were inside this rotating cylinder, and it was made up of different tiles. Some of them were solid tiles, some were glass tiles that can break, and some were just empty pitfalls. And the whole thing rotates, and you all have to work together to push a ball through as far down the cylinder as you can without it dropping through a glass plate or into one of the pitfalls. And people were just getting really into seeing like how far the players could get it. And it was a really, really awesome experience. So.
Is that coming? That's PS3, PS4, and Xbox 360.
Yes.
Is that launch?
They haven't said.
There's
going
to be so
they're trying
many
to get it out
games.
This year, they
if it's
said.
Coming on the 360, it might be.
Well, I'm looking at this list, and so many of these games are coming to the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how many indie games are coming to the PS4. I played Killzone Shadowfall multiplayer, and it was okay.
I played this one on PS4 during the demo.
Yeah, and it's like I've played so many. I played like I can't think of a single PS4 game I'm like really, really excited for that's going to be at launch. But there's like a bunch of indie games that I'm super psyched for in the first month.
Yeah,
I think it will be launched, but I'm not 100% sure.
Oh well, hopefully. In case, man, it's going to be crazy to like look at your friends list and everyone's just playing indie games.
Well, and it's funny to me because it's like
and Drive Club
games like this and Towerfall, which is also not on this list, but that one's out on Ouya.
Yeah, it's out on
and
the
right
Ouya.
Now it's console exclusive, so
it's coming to PC soon.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, that game is amazing, and these are like if you've always been looking for really fun co-op games to play with your friends that don't require a ton of time commitment, this is definitely one that you'll enjoy.
Speaking of which, I know you were saying you wanted to write an article up about that.
Yeah.
We kind of have one. It's best party games, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
That's sort of what we were trying to find the term for, like, what describes a game like that, where you're kind of like, there's not a lot of investment. You can learn it in 5 minutes. There's depth, but it's more, and it's just like, party games.
I mean, I guess this just reminded me of when my friends and I used to play Geometry Wars together while hanging out with a nice keg of Yingling.
Good call.
Yingling.
It's so good.
Dude, Yingling's the best.
I know.
Stupid West Coast. It's lack of Yingling.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's a wonderful beer.
Yes.
What kind of beer?
I cannot remember off the top of my head.
A beer that I like.
I'd only ever had it
really?
Once.
Yes. It's super good.
It must be.
Number 6, game by Capybara, Super Time Force. So good.
I've
so,
been hearing about this one for a long time, so, but I have yet to see it.
I'm
going to
describe how it works because it's kind of hard to understand how good it is without knowing how it works. So it looks like a Contra kind of game very minimalist art. Not even like Super Nintendo. Like, it looks like they're going for like 8-bit kind of aesthetics, but it's so chaotic and there's so much on screen that there's no way this couldn't, there's like, this wouldn't be able to be run on like a last gen console because it's just like pixel art. But the idea is that there's a squad of people, the Super Time Force, that are sent through time to right the wrongs of history, like the dinosaurs being killed off or the invention of internet plugins. So you have to go around and prevent these things. So you'll teleport back in this machine, you'll drop down, and it's like a Contra game where you're going and you're shooting enemies, and there's like 10 different characters. But once, if you die, unlike a regular Contra game where you go back to the beginning of the level, you go into timeout mode. And timeout mode works like a timeline where you can just rewind to a point where you're safe, mm-hmm. and you spawn as a different character that fights alongside the other character you just played as.
Does the other character you just played as run the exact same animation
yes.
that you just did?
Yes.
Okay, so they're not like, they don't become
no.
like AI.
No, it's, they run the exact animation. And let's say your character got killed by a sniper, and mm-hmm. you change characters and you kill the person that killed them, they'll survive.
But will they just stand there?
You can go and collect them, and you get points and like a shield on your character
oh, cool.
so that you can take another hit. Nice. You can also time out and rewind whenever you want, even if you don't die. You're limited to how many times you can do it in a level, but I think it's like 30 times. And the reason you're going to want to do that is you only have 1 minute in each level, so you need to make sure every second counts. So
if you're at like 45 seconds and you rewind time back to 30 seconds, do you start from 30 seconds?
Yes. So let's say you're going and let's say you get like in one level I was in a sewer and I fought a gigantic monster made of poop. I got to him, and there's also like as you go you'll pick up little things that'll bump your time up by 10
right,
seconds.
Sure.
So you will end up, but I got to this boss. I beat him, but it took me like probably like 35 seconds. So I only had 15 seconds left when I beat him.
Mm-hmm.
Rewind until the beginning of the battle, spawn a new person, fight side by side with my other character, so we're dealing double the damage. Now he dies in 15 seconds. Spawn another person, now he dies in about 8 seconds. Spawn another, and then eventually I've spawned like 7 people. They're all going by the exact same path as I went. Some of them died when he threw like an attack. I jumped up and shot that attack, so I was able to collect them. So now this guy dies in like 2 seconds, and I'm able to go on immediately.
That's awesome. Really cool.
It controls perfectly.
Yeah.
It's so, so easy to get into, and it is just mind-numbingly fun. There's even times where it's like, it has sort of the fun of like a speedrunner kind of game or like a time challenge, because there are times where you're like, shit, I could have done that faster. And you're like, well, I kind of need to do that faster. So you'll mm-hmm. rewind, grab on, and then just like watch your other self fail, but go and do it again.
Right. So do you ever feel like you need to like restart the level or just rewind and try something else?
I'm sure there will be instances that you need to restart, but in most cases, unless you're running low on timeouts, there's mm-hmm. nothing to stop you from just rewinding well before you fuck. Like one time, the developer was watching me play, and I beat a ball. I beat a few enemies, and then I jumped and I did this thing, and I'm like, all right. And he's like, well, you probably could have shaved off a lot of time much earlier. So I rewinded like 20 seconds mm-hmm. and then went through it. And there's other times where it's like, I haven't seen exactly how it works, but it looks like there might be instances where like you kind of need. So there's a door that you, like, as I was falling down this hall, like this tunnel, there was a door that I had time to shoot at, but not try to go into it.
Hmm.
So theoretically, I didn't get a chance to do it, but like if one character's falling and shoots the door open so another character can jump in, probably a way you could do it.
That I'm sure that opens up like the opportunity for a ton
so
of really cool puzzles.
So many puzzle opportunities. And also the characters are really silly. Like most of them are normal, but there's a guy in a bathrobe who just has a lightsaber. Everyone has a charged attack, and his attack is just he throws the lightsaber and it does like the spinning thing.
Nice.
I think it's Zachosaurus, which is as close to Denver the Last Dinosaur as they could get without being sued. It's a green dinosaur with sunglasses and a skateboard and a Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, boy.
and he just bites. And there's also a giant blob of poop that his special attack is that he turns around and farts, and then if you shoot through the fart, it blows up. So very funny. Gameplay is so good. And
you also get that really great feeling of like at the end of Super Meat Boy where you get to watch
Right.
All of your people except, running around on the same screen.
Except they're all interacting and helping.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And I guess that's kind of similar to another game that's not on this list, but I saw at PAX that I'm really excited for called Life Goes On. Where,
oh, right.
Yeah, and so it's just a game where when you die, you immediately respawn, but your corpse stays, and it uses for puzzles. So in one instance, there was like a spike, like a bed of spikes that you couldn't jump over.
Mm-hmm.
So you watch the character run, jump, die on the spikes. Next second character just comes, runs, jumps on the head of the guy before him, and then jumps to the platform.
Oh, my
so,
God.
I like that games are going pretty crazy with taking advantage of.
Yeah, those are
of,
such cool mechanics.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Really excited to see where those go.
Number five on the list of the best games of PAX 2013, The Wolf Among Us.
I have seen nothing of this game.
So it's based on the Fables comic.
Neither have I.
It's
why
based on the
me?
Fables comic, which the plot is all the fairy tale worlds and and all like the fable worlds are all all actual worlds that existed, but somebody named the Adversary went around conquering them, and they escaped to our world where they just kind of live in New York City and hide from everyone else. And you play as Bigby Wolf, the big bad wolf turned into a human. Who is the sheriff of Fable Town? made by Telltale Games. Very similar tone, I'd say, to The Walking Dead. Like
the art style looks remarkably similar as well.
It does. It's the same kind of art style in that it's like sort of cell shaded, but it's very very 80s.
Mm.
So it's like very cell shaded, but everything's neon purple.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's super dark. Like you're seeing corpses. Like. You're throwing people out of windows.
Yeah, didn't you mention there's like actual some kind of combat or?
Yeah, the combat almost feels like. Did you remember Splinter Cell Conviction's interrogation scenes?
Right.
Yes. There was combat that was like that. So you in the level when I saw it. So Bigby Wolf gets a call from Mr. Toad that there are loud noises coming from the apartment above him. He goes upstairs and a lumberjack looking feller who is actually the. So all and also it's worth noting that the big bad wolf from the Three Little Pigs is the same one from like Little Red Riding Hood. Like those fables all intertwine. So it's the lumberjack or the woodsman from Little Red Riding Hood who is drunk and beating up a prostitute.
Oh my God.
So you get into a fight with him and like he's like you're forgetting how this went the last time we fought. I cut you open and filled you with rocks. Like just like really like kind of like weird but funny references, but then like you're just punching him with like shoulder buttons, and then like you'll grab him and you can look around the room and see where you want to throw him, and then like throw him near like the into the oven, and then go and slam his head in the oven and smash him with a glass, and you're like and then you throw him out the window eventually.
How
and
fluid is that though? Because I felt like some of the
more
the
fluid
mechanics
so,
in Walking Dead were really clunky,
much more fluid than Walking Dead's, but still not like action game.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's still a quick time event battle at its core. It's just a much more interactive, probably more in line with like a Heavy Rain in that it's like you do feel like you're in control of a very powerful character, and that's why they said they did it. I mean, Lee is cowering from the enemies he's fighting. You're
right.
Playing as the big bad fucking wolf.
Sure.
He'd better be able to beat up someone. So really fun, really dark, and I'm a little tiny bit worried because it's early, but it kind of looks like there's some weird pacing things. I could be wrong. It could have just been the demo, but I'm still super excited, and it is coming out this year. The season is starting.
Oh, wow.
Telltale has said they are now a two-game-at-a-time development company.
Which is awesome. That's very exciting.
Yeah. So number four on the list, Transistor.
Oh, my God. I'm pretty sure I'm obsessed with this game at this point, or at least at the very least its soundtrack, which you and I were listening to on loop yesterday for today. I probably listened to it like 30 times over. But the follow-up to Bastion from Supergiant Games, Transistor is kind of like the combat is you pretty much pause a battle and queue up a series of attacks and movements, and then sort of like you would in a what is the word I'm looking for here?
Tactic,
turn-based strategy game, sort of. And you know, in fact, we'd seen the same demo before. Like this wasn't a new demo,
so like five times. We keep seeing the same demo.
And
every time.
But it was the first time I got to play it. And one thing that really struck me, I mean, we'd covered the mechanics before, right? Like you're playing as Red, a woman who had had her voice stolen, and she was a singer.
The Little Mermaid.
Not quite.
The Little Mermaid.
She has her voice stolen by some kind of group called The Process, and they're kind of hunting her down, trying to, presumably kill her. And
it's very weird and dystopian.
What a poor, unfortunate soul.
And it takes place in this kind of cyberpunk city, and there are a bunch of little robot dudes, and you fight them in this kind of strategic style combat. But one thing,
which again plays with the idea of rewinding and timelines,
yeah,
that's becoming
really
like a super
weird,
common
right.
thing.
But I really liked that, and
thank you, Prince of Persia.
But the one thing that really stuck out to me during the demo was how much atmosphere it has. Because one thing that's really cool about the music is it kind of starts off very like slow and digital, weird sounding, and it kind of for me it really I guess paralleled her at the start of the game where she's like panicking and finds this sword, the transistor, and is not sure what the hell's going on.
And the sword does talk to her, and it's voiced by the guy who voiced the narrator.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And he's doing a totally different voice.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is
kind of tell.
You are. It is going to be a full narrated game. That's just what Supergiant does, and I wouldn't want anything else.
Cool. But the one thing that I thought was really cool is the music when you pause the game to like cue up her attacks. The notes of the songs are replaced by hums from the singer's voice. And it was just like really, I don't know, that was really powerful to me. Like it almost sounded like she's trying to get her voice back but can't quite actually get words out. It's just like these hums.
Mm. And if there's any developer that is actively trying to get that level of depth in terms of storytelling mm-hmm. and symbolism in their game, it's going to be Supergiant.
Yeah, so that stuff really, really was just incredible to me. So I cannot wait to play this, the full thing.
Number three is a game that I know Greg played.
Yeah.
Contrast.
I did play Contrast.
And you lost your mind about Contrast.
I thought Contrast was really great. It has a pretty simple game mechanic where you play the imaginary friend of a little girl named Dee Dee. So you play the character of Dawn. She has the ability to go, like, warp onto the wall and become a shadow and then interact with things that are shadows on the wall. And you use that as to, you know, get to higher levels and stuff, and you can warp in and out of the wall at will, pretty much. So say you've got two walls that are separated by a gap, and there's a shadow that's on both walls. You have to run along as a shadow, warp out and jump across to the other wall, then warp back into the shadow.
So you can't jump while you're a shadow.
Now, you can jump while you're a shadow, but you can't bridge that gap because there's no shadow there. So if you ever jump to a place where there isn't a shadow, then you'll warp back into the real world.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the setting is really cool. It's 1920s, like the Roaring Twenties, mixed with the 40s and 50s film noir. Hmm. And
kind of a burlesque feel, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So the 20s had, like, the burlesque shows and things like that. But you play as the imaginary friend of Lil Dee Dee, and her parents are in a bad way. Her dad is mixed up with the mob who—he owes the mob money because he's a circus impresario that is trying to get this fledgling circus off the ground. Her mom is a burlesque singer, and— you're trying to fix your parents' problems through the eyes of this little girl as her imaginary friend.
I like how indie games' plots either sound like silly jokes or crazy deep indie movies.
Yeah,
like,
right,
it's either Super Time Force where you're trying to save the dinosaurs, or like your circus father owes money and you're trying to help him, but you have to use your imaginary friend.
You know,
like, it's always one or the other.
One thing that I found really interesting too is just lately some of the most powerful story-related experiences I've ever had playing video games have been almost exclusively through indie games.
Yeah.
Like, there's just some incredible games out there that do such a good job with storytelling.
Yeah, and you're using these storytelling elements. Like, you have to fix a... what's that thing that goes around in circles
carousel.
With horses? Yeah, carousel. You have to fix a carousel because that's going to bring more people to the circus. So you're hopping over the horses that are casting shadows on the wall, and you have to get to the top. Some really cool elements that he showed me, kind of like a back rendering. He like opened up the debug and all
right.
of that. And so everything that casts a shadow on the wall is physically present somewhere. If it's not like, so there's these flashback sequences that are pretty much just for using to get to find little collectibles, but they also tell little bits of story. So the one he showed me was, and they're all played out in shadows on the wall. So he showed me one where the dad is going to the mob boss and being like, I don't have the money, and then is just getting beaten by the boss. And this is playing out on the wall. But there's nothing there in the real world while you're running around. And so then you hop up onto the shadow, use the shadows before it plays all the way out to get all the way to the top to grab a collectible. But so he was like, okay, so this isn't something that just plays on the wall. Those physical models actually exist. So he turned on the wireframe mode, and based on where the light was actually positioned, they had a full physical model of that happening.
Wow.
And that was what was casting a shadow on the wall. And then you're running up that shadow.
It feels like that's the best. It feels like that's the coolest way to do it, but it also feels like a poor use of system resources. Yeah. We're like, rendering a full 3D game as you're jumping on 2D shadows.
Yeah, and so another couple of really cool mechanics that were very simple but had like drastic changes was, say you were in the real world and you could pick up a box, and you can move the box to get to higher levels or whatever, but you can also take that box into the shadow world with you. And then you can leave the box in the shadow world and then hop out, and so the box stays in there. And or you could, you know, hop on the box in the shadow world, get to bigger levels.
Nice.
If you know where the light is coming from that's casting the shadows on the wall, you can use the box in the real world, place it in relation to the light, and that will change the shadow that's cast on the wall. So if you have it really far away, the box is going to be really small on the wall. If you bring the box closer to the light, it's going to be this, like, looming box on the wall.
Oh, that is so cool.
So that, he was saying there are several different ways you can achieve every single situation. I'm really excited about it. It's 6-7 hours long. It's going to be a PS4 launch title.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, God.
And
I cannot wait.
It's also coming out on PC and 360 as well.
Same time, or
he didn't say, but
I bet Sony grabbed a few
after.
Exclusives just for like in terms of like it'll come out on PC 3 weeks later. Yeah, but it's probably. Like, man, in that time, I'll just play them all. On
it's a really
PS4.
Small team too, and it looks slightly larger budget.
Yeah.
And all of the art is done by this girl. I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she's like a 20-year-old girl straight out of like art school that just thought they like, you know, come do some concept art, and then she ended up doing everything on the project.
Wow, that's so cool.
And there's all this there's an original soundtrack a lot like Transistor, where there's this woman that sings like these like moody burlesque show songs, and they wrote all of those for the show.
That's so cool.
And it is very awesome.
Awesome.
Looking
and
forward to it.
Yeah, so me too. I keep getting excited whenever I see like art of that game.
I know.
Moving away from the indie games for number two and one. Number two is a game that I think everyone was really excited for 6 years ago and then less excited for three. The new Dragon Age game.
Yes. So
Inquisition?
Yeah, Inquisition. A lot of people, you know, really, really enjoyed Origins. A lot felt burned by two.
That's what I was getting at with my really
reasons.
Shitty segue.
And, you know, that's exactly how I was kind of going into Inquisition. I knew some of the concepts that BioWare had revealed earlier before the show. I wasn't exactly sure how those would play out. And then when they showed me the demo, I mean, because they unveiled a ton of new information during their panel at PAX.
Mm-hmm.
But
they
I got
had panels about that game all day, every day.
Yeah. And I got to see everything that they showed during the reveal panel the night before it, and I met them in their hotel suite or whatever. It was nothing. Nothing erotic about it.
Did
Gregory,
you sleep with Mark Lidlaw?
I chatted.
Lead writer. No? Okay.
You spooned with Mark Lidlaw.
No
sex. We were spooning as he was showing me the demo. I was like, come on the couch and cuddle me while I show you this Dragon Age demo.
Click. Next slide. Click. Can you move your leg, sweetie? Thanks. Click.
But no, I was really, really surprised and quite frankly, like, amazed by the stuff that they were showing off. This game is super ambitious. It takes place in multiple regions of the world, each of which is bigger than all of Dragon Age 2 combined.
I mean, my apartment's bigger
than
Dragon
Age
2.
And they were running around one of the regions of the world, and you know how they had kind of described it as, Skyrim was a big inspiration for this, for the way we're building our world. And you can kind of see that, because you can go from one point to another. It takes basically forever to walk from one end of the map to the other side.
But
there are mounts you can ride, and there's just like tons of dungeons and caves sprinkled throughout the land that you can
check
out if you want.
So it's Dragon Age meets Skyrim?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And
oh
But the other cool thing is you're actually in control of an entire organization, the Inquisition, and you have to actually build it up. Like, you have to capture keeps that are under control of various forces, and or some of them are controlled by bandits. And when you capture them, they add to your forces pool.
I love that so much. Any
Assassin's Creed does it super well.
Far Cry 3 also. Like, any time that there is like a bunch of different outposts that you can take over and then they become yours, I'm addicted.
Not only that, but it's like, you know, in those games, sometimes they don't really do anything. You just capture them and now you can go back there and there's, like, you can use them as a safe house or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now when you capture them, you also customize. They didn't really explain this very much, but you can choose one of three ways to customize each keep you control. Some add to your military might. Some add to your resources pool, and they hadn't really described how you'll actually use any of that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And one of them was something like espionage or
information.
Yeah, information gathering ones that gradually unlock new quests and things like that.
Hmm.
So you can kind of choose how you want each keep to be themed. And a lot of the times, too, they were showed me, like, yeah, you got to make really important decisions in the game, which is basically any RPG will make that claim. But the one they showed me was we were running through this region. We found a town that was under attack by the Templars, who are also currently at war with the mages.
Fucking Templars. They
They're a bunch of
dickheads.
They really are. But they were attacking this little village and, like, burning it to the ground. And I could either save the village or I could save one of my keeps that was also under attack.
Ooh.
And so I was like, well, I'm not going to give up the keep.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'd save the keep.
Easiest fucking choice you'll make that day.
And so they went and this was a hands-off demo, so they were showing all this stuff to me. And they went and killed everybody in the keep, saved it. Then they were like, now check this out. Went back to the village that had been under attack, and it was like, practically all burned to the ground, and there were just corpses everywhere.
Oh.
And they're like, so not only are all these people dead, but that also means any quests you may have gotten from this town are gone. Any shops and special items that might have been sold here, those are all gone. Like, basically, when you lose a town, it's gone, and so is everything that would have been in it.
Wow.
So that's really cool to me that you can lose out on entire quest hubs. You know, and so that gives, I guess, a little bit more weight to your decisions.
When's it out? Is it early next year?
2014. They're talking about, like, February or March. So
and
it looks incredible, just
it's
pure
gorgeous.
Visual terms.
It's gorgeous,
so pretty.
It does, and I'm looking at the article we wrote about it. Check out that typo in the bottom.
What did you write?
That's a good
the
typo.
Last line of the thing is check out the PAX gameplay.
Check it out.
Which actually, at a glance, it doesn't even look like a typo. It just looks like you were so excited that you're like check.
One thing I do have to mention real quick before we move on to our number one entry is. So the combat is basically a really nice mix of Origins and 2. So, like, in the PC-only version of Origins, you could get... Was that right, or was that in 2, where you could do the top-down...
Yeah, so in Dragon Age Origins on PC, you could hit spacebar, I think, and it paused the gameplay, and you can go to a top-down perspective and assign orders to each of your people.
Mm-hmm.
I played on the PC, and I thought that was the only way you were supposed to... I didn't even know there was another way to play.
Right.
Yeah.
Except on consoles, that wasn't even an option.
Yeah, you had to just do stuff in real time, which was really fucking hard at times. But that mode is back on
consoles.
Every
version. Consoles aren't powerful enough to pause a game.
Yeah, it was silly. But that mode will be in every version of the game. You can also do, like, real-time blocks and dodges, which is kind of cool. You know, if you liked the faster, like, the way that Dragon Age 2 combat worked, that's kind of how it plays if you're controlling just from during the real-time portions.
It's great to think about the fact that, I mean, it's kind of shitty that the last few years PC gaming has legitimately been held back by consoles. You have developers that don't want to develop far outside of what the consoles can do.
Right.
But that's why, like, if you look at gameplay footage of, like, Dragon Age, it's like, that looks double what Dragon Age 2 looked like, and that was on PCs, and it's just because
like
they didn't want to develop a game that couldn't be scaled down to the consoles, but now they don't have to scale them down to anything, so it's like all of a sudden PC games are going to look like they've received a generational leap as well.
Well, it's also worth noting that this is the only one that's run on Frostbite 3, so.
Yeah, but I was looking at other games, too. I was looking at, like, EA MMA. Which is, like, it's a console game, but it's like, holy hell, that does look like an entire new generation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the launch games don't look like that.
Yeah.
But you're going to see, like, so many cool PC games. Like, Assassin's Creed has some, like, crazy-looking stuff that it just didn't have before.
Yeah. But, yeah, that game really surprised me, and I cannot wait. This is the first time I've been excited about anything Dragon Age for a really long time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Number one on our list of the best games we saw at PAX 2013 are... Dice rings. There are these rings that Ryan and I got. They have the
D20s.
You can spin them and they roll dice. So that's it for Games Radar.
That is not it.
No?
No. I finally got my dream came true. I got to test my hype level on...
You got your grubby little hands.
My grubby little PAX-filled flu hands all over Titanfall.
Oh.
And honestly, it was a really close one, and I didn't even have hands-on with Dragon Age Inquisition, but I'm stoked for that one.
I hadn't heard you do the Skyrim comparison, and now...
I need to
go lay down.
Yeah.
I feel like...
I'm physically exhausted.
I'm so... Thinking about the possibilities has exerted so much energy.
Yeah, this is a real squeaker for me. But in terms of the first-person shooter genre that I love near and dear to my heart, Titanfall has met the hype that I set up for myself and then surpassed it. The E3 gameplay trailer that they showed off looked... really ambitious. Like, if everything worked that way, then it will be super awesome. And then they...
But would it?
And but it does. Ooh. It does flawlessly so far. And we played through that they recently released, like, a four-minute new gameplay trailer segment where it's basically you're moving forward towards this extraction point. And it was so... perfect in the way it controls that the moment I picked it up, I felt like I knew how to do absolutely everything. And you can jetpack and run off of walls and grab ledges and pull yourself up. And
Brink 2.0.
It really, there was like a really deep parkour system in there that seemed like it just works. It's intuitive.
Yeah, I think
it's very, very intuitive.
It's not like you need to hit a button and then hold down another button to do this and then hold down another button to do that. It's just context. Gaming has always struggled to figure out what things can be context sensitive without taking control away, and it sounds like that did it perfect.
Yeah, and it's also, I feel like, the perfect combination between Call of Duty and Battlefield, because you have the really intense, like, close combat firefights that are going on. The guns feel really tight. They feel a lot more like Call of Duty guns than Battlefield gameplay, but once you jetpack to the top of a roof and look around, and you see that there are like two Titans fighting over there, there's like 40 guys fighting over there, because they mix AI teammates with real players.
That's awesome.
So yeah, like I took down a wave of like two guys, took down real fast. I turn around, I see another guy, he has a name above his head, took him down. Turn around, there's a sniper on the roof, but it's an AI teammate. So it just gives this the game like a really massive scope. And then once you, I couldn't quite figure it out, but if you have I don't know if it's a certain amount of kills or if it's a time frame thing, but then when you get the Titan, you can deploy it, and it comes rocketing down from space. And while all of this is happening, like the skybox is just a massive battle going on at all times. There are huge ships just warping in, exploding, debris falling. And so once you pop into the Titan, he basically leans down and, like, picks you up and puts you into the middle of him. And, like, all these screens come up. And I've played a lot of other mech games before.
Yeah.
And you feel, you know, you feel like – you feel every step. You're clunking forward. You're basically a tank – that's standing up and shooting things.
Mm-hmm.
In this version of mechs, it's a lot more fluid. You can dash around and do like little hop bursts, but then you just like mow people away on the ground. Like there's just like hundreds of people down there, and you're just like blowing them all away. You just feel like a bigger version of yourself when you were small, but now you have massive rockets attached to yourself, and. And I was able to kill one or two Titans, and it was incredibly satisfying. And that changes the gameplay. It's like the vehicular combat of Battlefield meets the small combat of Call of Duty, like right in the middle. And I had to eject from my Titan and launch straight into the air, landed on the roof. And then apparently we failed the mission, but it kept going. They're like, your main objective had failed. And so we're like, it sucks. But the map was like, all right, but now you have to try and get out of this area. Like, we're going to fall back and then leave. And so there was, like, a couple of, like, extraction ships on the top of this building. And, you know, we're all booking it. It, like, there's a countdown timer. People are getting onto the ship. People are jetpacking in. I'm, like, running across the rooftops. I see it there, and the countdown timer's right there. And I'd leap and use up all my jetpack fuel and fall, like, 4 feet short of the roof as it's, like, rocketing away. I was just like, no! Then I realized a bunch of my teammates were on the ground, too. We were all just like, ah, oh, shit. And it was just great. Like, honestly, I have not been that excited for a game, played it, and then felt like it met my expectations.
Well, good news. You're not going to have to wait too long because it is that one's coming out early 2014. I just looked it up. Dragon Age is currently scheduled for, like, fall 2014. It says quarter three.
Oh, wow.
But
they're going to scratch two totally different itches, and I think both games are going to be incredible. Yeah,
but it looks like right now Respawn has said quarter one, so probably within the next 6 months.
Holy shit. Like, EA is basically set with between Battlefield, then Titanfall, then Dragon Age.
Yeah.
They got a really strong
lineup.
What
a good purchase they made with Grab and Respawn to make this. They didn't buy Respawn, but they bought the exclusive rights for this game. What a good buy.
Yeah.
That game alone is going to move Xboxes.
Yeah.
Like, I compared it to the Halo of the Xbox One. Like, you got the Xbox to play Halo.
Right.
And I definitely feel like Titanfall is
console
going
gamers
to sell
will.
A
I
lot
feel, yeah,
of
like we discussed it then. Like, you're going to have a slightly different thing because this is coming to PC.
Yeah, it's all.
And
I mean,
Xbox 360.
I'm going to.
But that Xbox 360 version is probably going to be shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine it's going to be that good.
I have no interest in even touching the 360 version.
Yeah,
yeah. It's going to be like when Call of Duty comes out on the Wii, not the Wii U, the Wii.
Right.
It's going to be that version.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for our. Best games of PAX from 2013. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to find out more PAX coverage, we also have an article that just discusses some of the indie games we saw, like 30 of them.
Oh, man, there are so many good
ones.
On
the site.
Yeah. We wish we had room to put them all in the best, best of PAX.
If this was a movie right now or a TV show, we'd have like a scrolling, like, here's 20 more things. But
And also before we go, a quick shout out to everyone who showed up to the GR fan meetup.
Yeah, thank you very much, you guys. That was awesome. We had a really good time. Really good turnout also. So.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah, and be sure to come back regularly on Friday for a normal episode of Radio Radar. And until then, bye.